Welcome, everyone, and thanks for being with me this next hour. You are listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks, where I always ask myself the question, why wait for heaven? Why am I putting it off? Why am I waiting? And this, of course, is 1-2 Radio, where we hope that we're changing the way you experience life and spirituality. And today is February 3rd, 2017, if you're listening live. And you may have noticed, those of you who are kind of followers of 1-2 Radio, we've really been trying to shake some things up on Friday. We've been introducing some new shows, moving the schedules around, you know. We just keep playing with it. So the plan right now, and I say right now because you never know, but the plan right now is in this time slot at 8 a.m. on Fridays, two times a month, you're going to find me, the first and the third Fridays of the month, you're going to find me in this slot. On the second and the fourth Fridays of the month, you're going to find Mark Hessen. So right now we're kind of trading off. Now Mark's show, he's going to do something called One Too Many Voices, which means he basically gets to do whatever he wants. He'll do some interviews. He may do some astrology. He may do some Course in Miracles. So he's going to be shaking it up too. So I hope that you will follow us in this time slot and lots of the other new and original shows that are coming on Fridays. So I hope it's not too confusing, and I'll try to keep you up on Facebook in terms of what we're doing and what's actually playing that day. But thank you so much for being here. And I see that people are already playing with us over in our private group on Facebook. And so thank you for being here. It's so good to see you, Liliana and Mercy and Lynn and Greg. Thank you. It's great to see you here. And so, of course, if you want to post comments or questions during the show, you're welcome to do that. And for the rest of you who may not be over there, if you want to join us in that private group and you're not sure how to get there, just go to 12radio.com. That's our website, and you hit the chat button. You'll find it on the left side of the page. And when you do that, it'll direct you over to Facebook, where you can ask to join this private group. So that taken care of, let's talk about what we're going to do today. I'm really thrilled to have back my friend and author, Susan Dugan. And our topic today is, not too surprising, practicing forgiveness on a day-to-day basis, or as I've been calling it lately, surviving Earth school. So if you're a student of the course, then you know ultimately the answer is always forgiving ourselves for ever having believed that separation from God and from each other is even possible, because that's what we think and that's what we kind of have to address. So learning this kind of forgiveness, it really is a lifelong adventure. You don't just learn it once and it's done, but it really can be accomplished on a day-by-day, moment-by-moment basis. And I know that it's been several months since Susan and I did a show together, and when we discussed a topic for today, we agreed that given the current state of the illusion, whether it's yours or mine's or the world's, we just thought, you know, let's go back to the old faithful, practicing forgiveness. And both of us, actually, we love to always go back to two of the workbook lessons. Number 5, which is, I'm never upset for the reason I think. And number 34, which is, I could see peace instead of this. And by the way, if you started doing the lessons on January 1st, that is the lesson for today, lesson 34. I could see peace instead of this. So there again, the timing is pretty good for looking at these two lessons. So that's what we're going to do today. And I want to do a little bit of introduction of Susan, although I know that many of you who followed the show in the past, you know who she is. She is the author of 3 books on forgiveness, which are Extraordinary, Ordinary Forgiveness, Forgiveness Offers Everything I Want, and Forgiveness, the Key to Happiness. Susan, it sounds like you're kind of in a rut there on forgiveness.
Yeah, I guess it's my brand.
Yeah, it must be a pretty important topic. And Susan, by the way, is also the co-founder for a school for A Course in Miracles, and she facilitates weekly ACIM study groups here in Denver and does some other things as well, does a lot of teaching, et cetera. So welcome, Susan. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me. It's really nice to be back.
Oh, good. Well, and I must confess, when Susan and I were talking about what were we going to do, she said, well, you know, considering, you know, kind of what's going on in the world and, you know, well, the election, let's just say it. She goes, I think we ought to be talking about forgiveness. And I can tell you, I was just kind of like, do we have to? Do we have to go there? But of course, that's it. You know, this whole hierarchy of illusions, we want to think that some things are much, much more difficult than other things. And that's one thing I've been learning in this process. You know, I thought I was going along pretty good, going, okay, I'm forgiving this or I'm figuring this out. But when something really smacks me between the eyes, all of a sudden it feels overwhelming. And it's like, no, this is too big. This illusion is too big. This is too overwhelming. And so in some ways that was quite the setback for me. That's what it felt like. How about for you, Susan?
Right. Well, yes, when we were talking about what topic to choose here, you know, we were both, you know, kind of talking about how this is, we found this challenging, you know, and we find ourselves getting very triggered. But, you know, not to worry, because the Course is always telling us that the answer is all the same. And in, from our perspective, you know, within the dream, we do believe there's a hierarchy of illusions. And, you know, the currently for me, I was noticing that my, you know, I was feeling very, very threatened by the results of the election, while being aware that, you know, the people that on the, that voted, for Trump, you know, are also feeling very, very elated, perhaps, and vindicated and hopeful, you know. So there's always two sides to this within the ego thought system. And what really made me want to, revisit these two lessons, which really are the basics of forgiveness. Ken always talked about, you know, if you could just remember lesson 5, I'm never upset for the reason I think, and lesson 34, I could see peace instead of this. Those are really the two steps of forgiveness that will help you out the most. And, you know, the first one is I'm not the cause of whatever I'm feeling is not blank. It's not, you know, the results of the election or the behavior of the president or the behavior of my spouse or the, you know, what my boss just said to me or what's happening in my body. I mean, you name it, whatever's upsetting us is not the cause of the true cause of our upset. The cause is always my choice for teacher in the mind and my wanting to make the dream real and wanting to make the idea of a separated self real, of me as an individual self against the world, basically. Against others, you know, the ego's agenda is always I exist, but it's not my fault. It's blanks. Yeah. So we need blanks. We need to fill in that blank. And, you know, and we have a hierarchy of illusions. So the bigger the boogeyman, you know, the louder the boogeyman we envision, the better, you know. And again, it does it from our perspective in the world as seeming personal selves. We all seem different and we all have different, different characters that we would insert in that blank that will either, you know, are out to get us or are going to redeem us. But, you know, that cast of characters changes, but the Course is saying, no, that's not true. And so, you know, the reason again is always that whenever I'm upset about anything, it's not because of, what I think it is. It's, you know, I have to be able to be willing to at least entertain the possibility that I'm wrong. And the next step, lesson 34, I could see peace instead of this is really just true. I mean, that's just that the peace is always there, that right mind, that memory of our unity, our undifferentiated unity, that oneness joined as one of our true nature that we've forgotten, deliberately forgotten, because we wanted to try out an alternative, you know, that peace is always within us and it's within everyone. Everyone has a right and wrong mind. Everyone has a decision-making mind. And, you know, we're always trying to deny the mind by focusing only on the body's perceptions and projecting them out and then perceiving ourselves victimized by them. What really brought me back to these lessons though was an awareness. A couple weeks ago, I went to the Women's March here in Denver. And found myself, you know, I'd been really kind of, I've been deliberately choosing, and I was aware of it, you know, to to really react and be and feel victimized by what was going on, feel frightened, feel upset, you know, feel confounded in all of those emotions. And not understanding it and feeling very separated, you know, from the other side, quote unquote. And I attended the Women's March with a few friends and noticed how I really, I felt so good. You know, I felt elated. I felt while I was there, I felt, well, this is all wonderful. And it felt, you know, it felt very positive. It felt, you know, you were surrounded by people who seemed to be your people and were, espousing, you know, my viewpoints and seemed to be doing it in a very positive way. There wasn't anything violent or even really mean-spirited that I was witnessing about it. But what I noticed was just how attracted I was to also giving that the power to say, now I'm happy, you know?
Uh-huh.
I'm okay. You know, I feel okay now. And it's the same mistake, you know, it's two sides of the same sword. And if I'm not, you know, if I believe the world can bring me pleasure, I believe it can bring me pain. And of course I do. I do believe it can bring me pain. And it's that belief that the world is, you know, anchoring ourselves in the dream, in the world, and not ever questioning it, that really is the cause of our suffering. And the Course is not saying that we don't participate in the world as long as we believe we're here. You know, Ken was a big proponent of you do the normal things, but while we're doing them, the process is to keep that awareness within us that, you know, to return to the idea that this is not, you know, what's happening outside me and happening in the world is really not the cause of what I'm experiencing and feeling. And, you know, this really is a choice that I'm making at the level of the mind. And right now, if I'm choosing to see a divisive situation here and I'm choosing to identify with one group over another and become invested in that, that's a choice I'm making. And it's a choice I'm making out of fear that, you know, because I no longer really know what I am anymore, what my true identity is as one with God. I'm afraid of God now, and I'm afraid of looking beyond, looking with Jesus, looking beyond these superficial, which really are, the Course tells us, superficial differences, even though we think they're astronomical differences,
mm-hmm.
Unforgivable differences. And, you know, the Course is always saying, no, you're wrong about that. And our inner teacher, Jesus, Holy Spirit, whatever symbol you want to work with, will never agree with us on that. So on a practical level, the daily work of this is to be mindful of what we're doing. And when I'm, you know, to own my choice and for, whatever I'm experiencing and take 100% responsibility of that, back to my mind, even if I'm not willing to let it go. The awareness that I'm not willing to let it go tells me that, you know, I'm very deeply invested in the ego right now. That's not a sin, but it's the awareness. It's the looking at the ego with Jesus, realizing that he does not agree with this. He doesn't see it this way. You know, everyone is loved and loving, and everything that's not love here is a call for love. And it doesn't really matter if I know that or not, because my only job is to be loving and to learn to be loving and to learn to love myself, which means I can't be excluding someone, you know, at the level of the mind anyway. Here we have to, you know, we can't be. But that's the daily work of this Course. And so, you know, opportunities in which we feel very highly unfairly treated and we have an ongoing situation, which is true in our personal life too, you know, in which we're having to deal with something that seems extremely challenging. That's what Ken called a classroom. That's what the Course says is our work, is our curriculum. And we have great, you know, we don't know what's in our best interests, and the learning that can be taking place if we are mindful and using this to, instead of root ourselves more deeply in the dream, to take another step toward awakening from the dream and healing our mind and seeing that we truly are all the same at the level of the mind, and we're all frightened here and we all are trying to find our way home. That is in my best interests. that will bring me peace eventually.
And yeah,
the peace doesn't go anywhere. The peace is available to all of us, and we fight very, very hard against it, but we're all afraid of it. That's why.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you said some things in there that I think are so important. One is that you specifically had said, you know, we're not upset for the reason we think, but we're also not happy for the reason we think. You know, we always want to assign some outside value that is then controlling or adding to our happiness or whatever. And ultimately, that's not true. But I think the other thing is the willingness to see it, or the willingness, because what I've noticed is maybe in my personal life or in a personal situation or relationship, when I find I've lost my peace of mind, most of the time I can kind of quickly say something like, I could see peace instead of this. I could feel something different. But what I found about the election is I did allow the hierarchy of illusions to come in. And you, when people would say something anywhere close to, well, you're just going to have to get over it, I was like, no, I'm not going to get over it. I don't have to get over it. And it, what I found is I wasn't willing to get over it. You know, the willingness, you know, it goes right back to the course where they say you can't separate things out. You can't say this is okay to forgive or this person is okay to forgive, but I'm going to hold this one out as an exception. The minute we hold something as an exception, then we're in trouble. And I mean, I knew I was doing it, but I was like that little kid kicking and screaming. And in fact, sometimes I still am, just kicking and screaming, going, well, no, I'm not going to get over it. I'm not going to forget this. You know, I'm not going to do that. And yet every minute I do that, it goes right back to that, why wait for heaven? I mean, who's really suffering in this situation but me?
Well, that's, you know, right. We can't experience peace while we're holding on to it. And, you know, the Course says, excuse me, it tells us not to fight ourselves, you know, not to struggle with this, because that's the ego really getting involved too, you know, through the back door, but to recognize that a part of me doesn't want to let this go. And the reason that a part of me doesn't want to let this go is because, you know, my identity is caught up in this. Who would I be without my, you know, the opinions that define me? Who would I
yes.
be without my identity as, you know, on the left or right, or, you know, as someone supporting this cause or that cause? Who would I be without my story of persecution that led me to this decision or this opinion? So, you know, that's part that we've incorporated, that collective identity that we have is just as much a part of our personal identity as anything else. It makes up the mix of all of those qualities that make me me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And although we're willing to join with others in, as I was saying, in a march, like I was talking about, where you're, you know, they were saying there were between 100,000 and 200,000 people marching in Denver. You know, and I feel one with them when I'm with them. I mean, we have all between us, and among us, we have all kinds of personal differences, you know, and there's all these factions within any political group in which, you know, my piece of it is much more important than your piece of it. And so the ego thought system, there really is no unity within the ego thought system. That's another story that we try to make real. It's not
right.
True, you know, but the important part, I think, about what you're saying, is that I can't feel peace when I'm excluding, period.
Mm-hmm.
And so because I'm excluding and I am saying I can't let this go, it must be because a part of me doesn't want to feel peace. You know, a part of me is really afraid of that quiet answer to my belief in the tiny mad idea of separation, which is the atonement principle. It never happened, you know? Not one note in heaven's song was missed, the Course says. That undifferentiated abstract unity that we remain as part of God, that we're unaware of now, remains uninterrupted. God doesn't know about it. God doesn't mess with illusions. You know, as much as we try to drag God into it, God only knows the truth in us. And the truth in us is that we really are peaceful and loving, and we're not bodies. So if I'm perceiving this and making a big deal out of it, it must be because I want, you know, I'm deliberately trying to make the body real. And the reason really is that guilt and fear that I'm on, you know, that I've buried in my mind over believing that I really did push God's love away for good. You know, mm-hmm. I'm lovable. And now we're fighting like hell. We're fighting each other like hell to prove that we're more lovable than they are, you know? And the best way that we can do that, the way that we prove that we're more innocent is that we need people to attack us. And on both sides, we feel attacked all the time. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it's in your personal life. It doesn't matter if it's in the worlds of, it doesn't matter where this is playing out. Our work as course students is to just remind ourselves that this is a classroom and that it's in my best interests to learn peace. Maybe I'm not ready yet because of, you know, that must mean that there's a part of me that's very, very afraid. And because I don't know what the alternative is, I no longer believe in that true self that, you know, I believe I threw away. But I want to learn because I know that when, you know, I know that my insistence on my addiction to this, this madness, this divisiveness, this conflict, constant conflict and constant attraction to feeling unfairly treated is not making me happy. So eventually I'm going to want to let this go because it's really painful, you know, mm-hmm. Pitsy peace instead of this.
Yeah. Well, and something you just said too, I want to clarify this and make sure I understand what you're saying because I recognize this too has to do with what I think I'm upset about. And that is when you said in truth, we really are peaceful, loving beings. And yet our bodies are not. Not yeah. as our bodies, not as our personalities. And why I say that's what's upsetting me is there is so much, I mean, you know, I'm so tied to the body. I want to think the human race is evolving. You know, I want to think that we're becoming enlightened. And I think that's, you know, and I know that's a judgment. So everybody out there, I mean, I think you know where I stand with this, but that's what was so, in a sense, what felt like it was devastating to me because that illusion of mine that we as bodies can become enlightened, that we as people, we can make these bodies better than they're ever going to be. And the truth is we're not. No. You know, we're, in a sense, human beings are fighting the same battles we've been fighting ever since we decided to create bodies. Right. And so all of a sudden that part of my illusion, that part of my ego just came crashing down. And yet I could see that. It's like you're still believing that human beings or the bodies can actually become something that they are not.
That's right. The body was made as a defense against love, to fence out love. The Course specifically says that. The Course says, you know, seek not to change the world. Choose to change your mind about the world. The world is a denial of the loving self. It was made to be an arena where we act out something opposite to that. And, you know, the belief in separation, which is the ego, projected ego thought system of one or the other, that is a constant seesaw of victors and, you know, victims and victimizers. And so no, there's no enlightenment here in the world. We don't wake up as bodies. And, you know, that's very radical and very challenging. We want to believe that we can make a better world. That roots us. I mean, what could root you more deeply in the dream than the belief that you can drag, you know, truth into it? Well, history should tell us that there's something wrong with that picture. There is no permanent peace here. And any win here will always involve a loss. You know, the very best that we can do is try to come up with compromises, which usually leave people very disgruntled. Those are special relationship bargains that work for a while and ultimately don't, you know? So no, the Course is saying that at the level of the mind within us, there is peace. And when we open our mind to seeing with our teacher and becoming, you know, more and more aware of that peace that includes and envelops everyone, there really is sort of an envelope of peace in which we're denying that is within all of us, you know, the worst, including the worst victimizer we can imagine, then, you know, that is that perspective. When we finally, when all the guilt in our mind is undone through practicing this specifically one, you know, seeming forgiveness challenge at a time, at, you know, at the end of that, we enter a state still in the body where that the Course calls the real world. And the real world is where we, you know, none of this disturbs us. We become, we grow up to become like our inner teacher because we see and our and perceive and experience exactly as Jesus Holy Spirit does, which is to see only loving, only the love that's truly there, to see beyond all this superficial nonsense. And so, you know, we at that point, we're completely kind. We don't have to grapple with forgiveness. There's no need for forgiveness because we know it's all just an illusion. We know we're just watching, you know, a movie that was over long ago, the Course says. So yes, it's challenging, but you know, I always try to like, I don't think that we need to understand the metaphysics of the Course, but that's not the level at which we practice or experience. And the Course is very practical and speaks to us very practically, you know, very clearly so in the workbook, about how you do this on a daily basis. And can I just read the beginning of lesson 5? Cause I think
absolutely
it's that. So he says, you know, it's the refrain, if you will, of the title of the lesson is, I am never upset for the reason I think. And he says, this idea, like the preceding one, can be used with any person, situation, or event you think is causing you pain. You think is causing you pain. Apply it specifically to whatever you believe is the cause of your upset, using the description of the feeling in whatever form seems accurate to you. The upset may seem to be fear, worry, depression, anxiety, anger, hatred, jealousy, or any number of forms, all of which will be perceived as different. This is not true. However, until you learn that form does not matter, each form becomes a proper subject for the exercises for the day. Applying the same idea to each of them separately is the first step in ultimately recognizing they are all the same. So, you know, we need to very specifically, moment to moment, be stopping and at least bringing to mind the thought that, for example, he goes on in the next paragraph, you know, I am not angry at and blank for the reason I think. I am not afraid of blank for the reason I think. So you could say, I am not angry at my spouse for the reason I think. I am not afraid of this policy of the president's for the reason I think. You know, you would use whatever is triggering you at the moment very specifically with this lesson. And these workbook lessons just introduce us to the practice, and that's what we take to our lives. So throughout, as we go through our day and we find our, you know, we get up in the morning and we begin to, you know, we check our phone and we have an email that upsets us, and we put on the radio and we have another story that upsets us, and we go downstairs and there's an issue we have to deal with a family member, you know, whatever it is that's going on, this is what we need to sort of set our purpose for the day. You know, my purpose is always, I have a choice at any given moment, whether I want to root myself more deeply in the dream or step back with my teacher and at least question it. And, you know, that is taking that first step toward a different point of view, toward seeing peace instead of this.
Yes. And, you know, the other couple of things in this particular lesson that I love is it says there are no small upsets.
No.
They are equally disturbing to my peace of mind. And later on it says, I cannot keep this form of upset and let the others go.
That's right.
You know, and like I said, that's what's really, really hitting me at this point is the recognition that I want to divide things into categories and say, this is forgivable and this isn't. And yet I know intellectually that's silly. you know, it's never going to work.
You know, Ken Wapnick used to say that the hardest thing for course students to accept about this, as we go on, you know, on our journey with the course, it dawns on us at some point that I want to hold on to my grievances. I want to have a hierarchy of illusions. I mean, that's what's really been most challenging for me about the current situation is it's keeping me in almost, well, because of our ability to know instantly what's going on, and because a lot of it's playing out in social media, and we all, you know, many of us have smartphones, so we're instantly aware of things that we wouldn't have been, before. But you know, it seems to be presenting this ongoing moment to moment challenge to the idea that I'm a peaceful and loving person because I'm clearly not. I'm clearly enraged, you know, throughout the day. And I'm clearly pointing a finger outside me at something else and someone else, and giving that situation and person the power to take my peace away. And the truth is, nothing outside our mind can disturb our peace or enhance our peace in any way unless we choose it. And so that we have to come face to face with that awareness that we are choosing this. You know, that really is what this lesson is all about. And
yes.
Then, you know, and the reason that those two lessons are complementary is, you know, I could see peace instead of this. Well, the peace is still there. So why am I choosing to throw my peace away? You know, and the whole course explains to us why we're doing that. And the whole point of it is to bring this more and more clearly into our awareness. And that's painful.
Uh-huh. Because, you know? I want to be self-righteously angry.
That's right. That's very, very painful. And we don't want to let it go. And we don't like, we're very uncomfortable with the thought and the awareness that, you know, a part of me wants this conflict. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, that's very guilt inducing for most of us, you know? And so the whole idea of projecting guilt onto an event or situation or a person out there, seemingly out there, was the ego's strategy to try to relieve that unconscious guilt in the mind. And so the course's answer is to bring that out of concealment and say, wait a minute. You know, if you're seeing this in someone else, this is exactly what you're accusing yourself of. And so that strategy is no longer unconscious for us. And, you know, so the work of this is really just acknowledging it, owning it, and then trying to not judge ourselves. Okay. So I still have an ego, you know, the ego hangs on till the very end, and, you know, it's going to up the ante. We're going to up the ante to try to get it, you know, to try to root ourselves more deeply in the dream constantly. So as we go on in our lives, we're challenged more and more by things that seem to be threatening to the body. But, you know, the course is, we're learning to generalize this to everything. We're learning that we have to apply it to everything because we can't find peace if we don't. You know, we can't experience peace. And that really is the only thing. That's where peace lies in this world. We can become peaceful. We can reflect that peace here once we begin to accept it for ourselves, within ourselves, and stop denying it. And that's a gradual process of really making this the new purpose of our lives. But Ken didn't take the ego, you know, he used to just say, okay, people have egos, what's the big deal? I mean, he was terribly attacked by many other, you know, by other sort of seeming factions out there and accused of all sorts of things. And his response was just a shrug and a smile, you know, like, well, you know, egos do what egos do. What's the big deal? What does that have to do with me? In my piece, it doesn't, unless we decide it does.
Yes. And speaking of Ken, I wanted to ask you this too, if you're missing him, because I have been missing him so much in the last few months. And primarily, I think, for the reason that you were saying, because I stop and I think, I wonder what Ken would be saying. And yet I know what Ken would be saying about this.
Yeah,
and
right.
Because I've listened to hours and hours and hours of workshops on tape that Ken did. And I know what Ken would say. But somehow I just want to hear him say it, just like you said. Egos do that. So what?
I
want to hear him say that to me right now.
I think I've listened to so much of him that I do hear him say that. I mean, I don't feel in many ways that I do miss him. I mean, you know, sometimes, yeah. Because I miss him in porn, but I also feel, you know, he has given us so much through his work. And like you, I've listened to so much of it. I've read so much of it. You know, we have the journey through the workbook, to help us if we get confused. We have the journey through the text and the journey through the manual books and, you know, CD sets to help us if we get confused. We have all of his voluminous, wonderful workshops. I mean, not all of them. I think there's hundreds and hundreds that still haven't even been, you know, released and put on CDs, but we have enough to keep us busy listening if we choose for the rest of our lives. And you can try any new one that you want. And he's saying
the same thing
eloquently and in a way that is, you know, seems new and bright and helpful, but is always the content is the same and completely consistent. So I don't think, I mean, if anything, what Ken's presence and seeming absence in form is teaching us is, you know, that he lives within us, that peace is available within us, and we don't have to be dependent on an external teacher for that. We have an internal teacher, and he reflected that internal teacher, and that internal teacher is always there. And, you know, sometimes I hear it in Ken's words within my head because it's the same. You know, he was just a reflection of that, and it's within us all. And we know on some level that that is really all we want. You know, I want to go home. I want to feel loved and loving. This conflict is literally killing me, and I don't want it anymore. And yet, you know, the resistance comes with the part of me that's still, well, what happens to me? And I still think there's a me. And so that's why this is a process. There seems to be a process, even though the Course tells us it's all solved and done. You know, and that we still are, you know, within God and living this uninterrupted oneness with God. In our experience within our dream, you know, it's a gradual process in which we generalize more and more. And it's not surprising that we would have things that seem a lot larger. Suddenly, you know, show up in the dream because we're, you know, the ego is always very intent on rooting us more deeply in the dream, but the ego only has the power the decision making mind gives it. The ego is part of my mind too. It's not this boogeyman out there. And so I have the power, and we're afraid of the power of the decision making mind. We ran away from it because we think we decided against God, but in truth, you know, that our salvation is in the decision-making mind. It didn't happen. That's where the awareness that it didn't happen lies. It's not a crime scene. It's, you know, everything we want. But we have to be coaxed very, very gradually, you know, again, through this practice of specifically applying these two lessons, the steps of forgiveness in our daily lives. And it doesn't have to be a mechanical kind of thing, but it's very, very helpful when you start out and for a long time to use these two lessons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mind
yourself. Yeah. And Susan, I would like, I'm going to ask you if you will respond to a couple of comments in the chat room. Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay. Alicia says, I can't resonate with the Course. I agree with a lot of it, but then others, if I'm understanding it correctly, just make no sense to me. That we can't evolve? Isn't awareness part of our evolution? People that don't have their basic needs met are so caught up in survival that they most times can't become involved on philosophical spiritual awareness. And one does not have to be angry to protest unfair unjust treatment and protect my neighbor. So okay. Do you want to respond to that?
Sure. You know, I don't think that the Course is for everybody. Ken said it wasn't for everybody. And there's many, many spiritual paths. And I do think that in our, you know, our personal journeys, we're all taking some kind of atonement path and personal journey. you know, perhaps through many lifetimes. And I don't think, I think that I agree that, you know, when all we're doing is fight, if you're in a state where all you're doing is fighting your physical needs, it's very, very, you know, it's very, very hard to be able to embrace a spiritual path like this. This really came to a Western world, and it's, you know, Helen used to say the course was for six people, you know. it's a very, very radical and challenging path. I think if it resonates with you, you'll know it. And if it doesn't resonate with you, no problem. You know, there's many, many paths, and all paths lead home. So the course doesn't identify itself as a superior path or the only path. It, for people who, like myself, who, you know, I recognized it as being my path because I was so aware of my, I guess you could call it unforgiveness, my sense of feeling not genuinely loving and well, never really loved, but also not really loving. And, you know, my awareness of how judgmental and critical I was, and that it hurt to be that way. And so if that is, if you feel like that, I think the course draws people that feel that. But if that's not, you know, if that's not resonating with you, then, you know, there's plenty of paths that are wonderful that may resonate much better.
Yes. Thank you, Susan. And, you know, one other thing I would add is to the last statement, and one does not have to be angry to protest unfair or unjust treatment. Absolutely. And I think that's one thing. Yeah. That's one thing that we are seeing when we can get to that place of neutrality. I mean, it doesn't, you know, I don't think the course is ever telling us don't behave like a human.
No.
You know, in fact, Ken Wapnick always said, be natural, be normal.
Yep.
But we don't have to be angry about it. And addressing our unforgiveness, addressing our anger is part of what we're talking about.
Right. Exactly. And my point to that really earlier was not that I didn't feel angry when I was participating in that Women's March, nor did I sense most of the people around me feeling angry at all. It felt very positive. And so, you know, that's what made it feel so good. And there's nothing wrong with standing up. I think that you should speak out when you, you know, that sometimes that can be the kindest thing to do. But we need to be, if you're a course student, you also have to do the work of really, really, you know, being mindful of your intentions with that, and really looking, if you're very invested in it, every, you know, of things going your way and still condemning others, then you have to look at that, you know, excluding others from the love that we are in your mind, then you have to look at that. You know, that doesn't mean that bodies don't do terrible things to each other and that we shouldn't do normal things to protect ourselves. And you don't know at any given moment what the right-minded thing to do would be. But if you're in touch with that loving presence within you, you'll know.
Okay, thank you, Susan. And then Lisa says, so then accepting the ego is what gives us peace?
I'm not really sure I understand that, but looking at the ego, being aware of our ego, yes, I think is what the course is doing. The course is looking, getting us to realize that we have an ego and be able to see the contrast between the ego and the whole, our choice for the ego and our choice for the right mind or Jesus, Holy Spirit, whatever symbol you want to work with, and to see that contrast. And if there's any sense of anyone being excluded at the level of the mind in anything that I'm doing, then it's of the ego. But that doesn't mean we judge ourselves for it. It just means that I have an ego. And that's because I'm, you know, there's a part of me that's very, very afraid of accepting the truth in us. And that's going to probably be a journey to that, to coming back, you know, to letting that fear go. But I don't have to do it alone. I have a loving teacher in my mind that is there every moment that I'm willing to entertain his viewpoint, its viewpoint, you know, and is there to help and teach. But I have to recognize first that I don't know, so that I can, you know, I can be taught.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think too, yeah, that question, it's hard to know exactly what it is, accepting the ego. But I think accepting on the level of even understanding that we have an ego,
yes,
that we have an ego versus a right mind, that's such a good step in the right direction, I think. It doesn't mean whether you, I mean, in fact, if anything, you don't judge your ego. You just recognize that it's speaking to you.
That's right.
You know?
It doesn't have the power. And, you know, unless we give it to, we all have egos, and really what we're looking at in anyone that we're judging is our own ego. There's only, the course is about my mind and my, and dealing with my ego. It's never really about anybody else.
Right. There is nobody else.
That's right. That's right. You know, but I mean, certainly that's not our experience. So it seems like we start, that's why this lesson is geared very specifically, as long as we believe that we are separate, then we need to, you know, be very specific about what we're feeling and what we think the cause is. That's what we need help with, because we're confused.
Right. And you know, I would reiterate what Susan said. I came to the course at a time literally where I felt like I was at a major crossroads. And you know, I'd like to say, yeah, everybody just embrace the course and it's great. But you know what? It's not for a lot of people. And for me, it was a last resort. It's right, because nothing else worked
me
for
too.
Me.
Yeah, I did try many other paths. But again, you know, they all have value. And I think there's many paths for, you know, this is very individual. And by no means should, you know, the course be the only thing that you look at if you're starting, you know, if you're exploring different paths. I do think that choosing one path, you know, that really does resonate with you is what's going to help you the most. And I know that when I was sort of dabbling around, I think part of that on my part was just, you know, I was fear was just not giving anything enough time to really help. But it's also because it didn't really feel like it was my path. Finally, when I came to the course after, you know, many years, it did feel like it. That's not to say that it felt, you know, that I'm not like angry with the course a lot. I am. I fight with Jesus. Most of my writing is about, you know, what kind of tantrums I throw about this course. But I always come, you know, I'm always led back through that process to peace. And I know that it has a healing effect. I felt it in the way I perceive and relate to the people closest to me has changed. And they haven't changed, you know, I'm changing. And that's making me feel more loved and loving. And that's the direction I want to go.
Right. So, you know, I mean, bottom line, I think that's it. It's like, how do we feel about our lives? And is what we're doing working? And for me personally, it didn't. The course came in and to me was like a total whack over the head. And I mean, literally, that was years ago. And I just continue to say, this is the only thing that totally made sense to me. This is my path. But I recognize it's not everybody's path.
Exactly.
But so on that note, I would also say, everybody, thank you so much for listening today. Thanks for opening your minds to the possibilities here and for posting your comments and your questions. I love having that kind of dialogue, and I hope that you'll come back, you know, every other week when we're here and ask those kind of questions or bring up those kind of topics, because ultimately that's it. We all want to find our way home. That's what we want. We want to find our way home. We want to feel loved. We want to find that peace that we know somewhere within us is there.
Absolutely. We really are the same. That's what the course is saying.
Yeah. Now, Susan, I would like, we have about 5 minutes to wrap up the show. And so I would like you to be able to make any announcements that you want to make. One thing I would say, though, right off the top, because I don't want to forget it, is that Susan and I often refer to Ken Wapnick, who is, you know, at least in my mind, one of the best teachers there's ever been with A Course in Miracles. And there is a foundation called the Foundation for A Course in Miracles, and they're the ones who have literally put together these thousands of hours of workshops and books, et cetera, et cetera. And I continue to get notices from them that they are discontinuing some of those CDs. So I know this is a great time to go over there and to check that out. I think they will continue to do MP3s, you know, downloads and that sort of thing, but they just have so much good material if you just want to kind of dive into some things and get some great prices. So that's the Foundation for A Course in Miracles, and it's facim.org, right?
Yeah, and I'm not sure that, I don't think that, I may be wrong, but that they're discontinuing CDs, but I think they're discontinuing the MP3 CDs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so, but go there. There's lots of good sales going on right now. There's also a new book called A Symphony of Love that is a collection of Ken Wapnick's poetry and creative writing and some autobiographical writing that he did that Gloria recently edited and put together. And I'm just starting it, but you know, it's a lovely book, and that's available for sale on the website. And they are still doing some classes, and you can stream those. There's one actually next week. It may be too late to sign up for that, but you could also sign up for a 2-day class in March, and you know, to attend through streaming if you go to the Temecula schedule page of their website. And if you're not, the great thing about the streaming is that even if you can't attend, you know, 2 days of it live, you can, they give you a couple weeks to review those recordings, so you can watch it more at your leisure afterwards. So the teachers there who studied for years and years and worked with Ken, Rosemary Lasasso and Jeff Siebert, are just astonishingly helpful, and have to have their own forgiveness journey, and you know, have really practiced and are great demonstrations of the defenselessness that can come from making this your purpose. So I highly recommend it, and they're very funny too.
Yes, and I've attended one of those streaming classes, and I was just incredibly surprised at how great it was to attend a class that way, because I guess I was kind of concerned that if you're not in the room, then does it feel the same? And it was just so incredible, the material that they presented, and I found out some things about myself too, because when I found myself wanting to get up and walk away, it was always when they were talking about something that was very difficult for me to listen to. But as you said, I could always come back and listen. I mean, I had 2 weeks to make sure that I could listen to all of it. So that was really wonderful. So Susan, do you have anything personally you want to announce? Anything about your talks or classes here in Denver in the metro area?
I teach on Tuesday nights at the Rock and Mountain Miracle Center here from 7 to 8:30, and we're going through the text. If you can email me through, well, my website, forays.com. If you would like information on that. I'll be doing a webinar, coming up in April, and I'll give you more information on that, but it will be on learning to laugh with Jesus.
Oh.
You can't do that to at least smile.
Yes. Well, and you'd be very good at that, because your books, I think, are hilarious.
Thank you. They might be getting darker. We don't know.
Yeah. Well, we'll see if that happens. So, Susan, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
And thanks to everybody, like I said, for being in the chat room, for listening today, and also to Scott Weaver, who is our producer. And I hope that you will stick with us on Fridays. We've got some great original programming coming up next. And remember, next week it's going to be Mark Husson and One Too Many Voices. And I know that that's Friday, February 10th, I believe. And there's going to be a full moon lunar eclipse for those of you who are into the astrology. So I'm really hoping that, you you know, that's going to be the topic of Mark's show. But no matter what he chooses, no doubt it's going to be entertaining and it's going to be interesting. So I hope you'll stay tuned for that. And also then the next week, I will be back with another Course in Miracles show. So thanks for listening. This is A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks with my guest, Susan Dugan, on 1-2 Radio, where we are changing the way you think about forgiveness.
Tamara Childs. 2017 has a fresh new page kind of feel. What would you like to experience in this new year? It's common to go all or nothing with those resolutions, but what if you just committed to a 1% shift this new year? Maybe you could be 1% happier or 1% more courageous or 1% more open to something new happening in your life. That's doable, right? And let those energies be part of you, the you you bring forward. And remember, you're not obligated to bring anything forward that doesn't belong in your new year. So, happy new year, and may 2017 be a wonderful year of you.
Everybody, Mark Huston here, and I love New Year's. It's kind of like you get a fresh start on, well, everything. But I get bugged by resolutions, so I wrote this poem that I call my non-resolutions resolution poem. I hope you like it. I don't find it astute if I continue to be resolute about changing the things that I have absolutely no intention of changing. Did you get that little pause? I'm throwing out the ones about losing weight, about taking half and not a whole piece of cake. I'd like to be kinder in all my dealings, but that flies out the window if you hurt my friend's feelings. I'm tossing out the ones about getting out of debt. I'm tired of making promises that just can't be kept. I'd like to meditate and clear out the thought drawer, but when things are empty, I just say, oh, look, there's room for more. I want to buy good food for us and the cats and show more empathy, you know, be more compassionate. I'd like to squelch all gossip and mind the useless chatter, but I'm scared if I'm not listening, I'll miss something that matters. Now, one idea that I find helpful to own is that everyone I meet will someday feel very alone. If I can keep that idea fresh in my mind, I wouldn't need a resolution.